Introduction. On January 8, 2004, I lost my brother Michael. He was 22 years old and I was 28, a month shy of turning 29. Michael was deployed in Iraq, serving as a flight medic in the Army. I became a clinical psychologist 5 months before he died. I can't help but to write this book interweaving both my personal experiences of losing my brother, along with my professional knowledge of grief and loss and experiences with the clients in my private practice. My hope is that this combination of who I am adds value to this book. I've received permission to share any information involving my client stories and my fellow sibling bereavers who graciously allowed me to interview them and include their stories, for which I am deeply grateful. This book will begin with my own story of being abruptly thrust into the world of grief and loss with the learning of the sudden death of my brother. I share my experiences of how this impacted me personally and professionally. I discuss common myths and beliefs about how grief works and the actual experience told by myself and others who have also lost siblings. My goal is to help normalize reactions, symptoms, and experiences, as well as provide hope and ideas on how to learn to live with the painful loss of a sibling. Ideas on ways to honor your sibling, as well as navigating through the holidays, birthdays, and other difficult days will also be shared. They say significant loss is a club that nobody wants to be a part of. This is true. However, if you are reading this, you're here, or you are somebody who wants to understand how to help and support someone who's lost a sibling or loved one. This book is first and foremost for the siblings who are learning to live with the devastating loss of their sibling. However, I also hope this can be a useful guide to their family, friends, partners, and even therapists to learn how to better understand and support them. With that said, I've included a chapter focused on ideas to bring to one's therapy, different types of therapies that may be useful to you, and information that may be helpful to therapists working with clients who are struggling with significant loss. I also discuss how grief is not created equal, and how deaths that are considered biologically out of order, such as children and siblings dying before their parents and grandparents, are often felt the deepest and leave the biggest wounds and traumatic reactions, including nightmares, flashbacks, avoidance, numbness, severe depression and anxiety, sometimes lasting years, especially if someone is not in professional treatment. As a result, these types of deaths need to be understood differently than, say, the loss of an elderly grandparent, and appropriate levels of support will often be required and recommended. One of the many challenges of living with significant grief is the lacking vocabulary in American culture pertaining to bereavement. There simply aren't enough words to describe the feelings and experiences associated with grief. In part, I believe, because nobody wants to talk about it. This often feels extremely frustrating to people because it's hard to describe a feeling there isn't a word for in the English language. Devastating seems to be one of the strongest words we have to pull from. Although devastating seems to better describe the effects of a destructive storm or an accident, all horrible without question. The death of a sibling or child is beyond devastating. But we don't have another word to name that feeling or experience. It's a level of brokenness that likely only another sibling or parent can truly understand. This limited language, therefore, makes even expressing grief with words that much more challenging. I will also use the term bereaver and not bereaved, because bereaved implies that the bereavement is in the past tense, and as I will describe more in this book, sibling loss is a loss someone lives with throughout their entire lives. You don't get over or move on from significant loss. You change and you learn to live with the loss. That's not to say the bereavement is always the same. The process and experience certainly changes over time, looking and feeling differently throughout one's life. Bereavement lives inside us, as part of us, and for most of the outside world, they never even know. This invisible thread and connection to our lost sibling lives in our heart and changes who we are. So I use bereaver to reflect that this is a current, ongoing activity and more of a verb than something past tense. One of my specialties in my private practice is to work with people who are experiencing significant loss, such as the loss of children, siblings, partners, and parents at a young age. I was inspired to finally write this book after learning from one of my clients, who had recently lost multiple siblings and family members within a short period of time, that there was still a sparse number of books written on and resources for sibling loss. This was also my experience in 2004 when I found little written about sibling loss. I was shocked and disappointed to learn that only a handful of books had been added to the literature since the time I lost my brother, 16 years ago. Because there wasn't a lot written on sibling loss, I ended up reading books that covered grief in general and the loss of a child or spouse. However, these losses differ significantly, and I felt a deep need to write this book and have the sibling story be told as well. I want my experience to help others through some of the very darkest, most painful times of their lives. I also do this as yet another way to honor my brother's life and early death. I will end this book with the ways I believe that this change is not all bad, despite how absolutely horrible it feels in the beginning, and may for a long time. In fact, some of this change can help you live a more present, engaged, and purposeful life than those who do not experience significant loss until later in life. These changes can powerfully shift our priorities and bring us the very real awareness that, in fact, we all have a timeline. We just don't know what it is. And we stop taking time and relationships for granted. I share some of the stories and messages shared with me during the interviews of fellow sibling bereavers as they recalled their memories and experiences with navigating through grief. I hope reading this book provides you some comfort in relating to some of these feelings, stories, and experiences, gives you some ideas that make sense to you in your journey through grief, and provides ways to process the loss of your sibling, ways to continue integrating them in your life and honoring them. Your siblings are a powerful part of your story, who you are, where you came from, and how you have or will change as a result of losing them. The invisible thread, well intact even through death, keeps us connected. Hold them in your heart. They get to be yours forever there. Chapter 1, The Call. Thursday, January 8th, 2004. The morning began quite ordinary by all accounts, leaving me completely unprepared for the call that would soon unravel my world. I remember looking over at the black phone ringing in my small office. I had a feeling that I didn't want to answer it and was supposed to be leaving for a meeting shortly. I'd recently been licensed as a clinical psychologist, and this was my first job at an agency that served families and children in Sacramento. I noticed a news report online earlier that a Black Hawk helicopter had been shot down in Fallujah, Iraq, where my brother Michael had been serving in the Army as a flight medic for nearly a year. I tried not to worry when I heard reports like this. He was always fine, and it didn't help any to worry. We wrote letters back and forth, and we last talked to him on Christmas Day. It was a mere 6 more weeks until he was scheduled to come home. Michael was the youngest of 3 children at 22. I was the oldest at a month shy of 29, and my sister Danny was in the middle at 26 years old. The phone rang again. Oh, I better answer this, I thought. My sister was on the other end. Her voice was shaken and upset, almost desperate, and surprised-sounding. You haven't talked to Dad yet? No, why? I asked. You haven't talked to Dad yet? She asked, this time even more upset and surprised. I later learned that Danny had known for the last hour that Michael had died, but my father had been unable to reach me. Danny realized in this moment that I didn't know yet, and she had to tell me. No. My voice more apprehensive now. Michael was killed. I didn't say anything. It was as if time stood still. I just froze. Did you hear me? She asked. Yes, was all I could say. Now growing more confused and frustrated with my seeming lack of response, she added firmly, You need to come home. Okay, I responded. You need to come home now, this time more forceful. Okay, I will. Nothing will ever be the same again, I remember her saying as she cried. Okay, I'll come home, I told her again. I was often the peacemaker in the family therapist at times, if you will. But this I couldn't really process, and there was nothing reassuring I could think of to say back to her. When I went to tell my supervisor, I could see the look of shock, horror, and sadness in her eyes. I remember saying, In case I'm not back by Monday, this was a Thursday. She stopped me and said, Dawn, you won't be back on Monday. You'll probably be gone for a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks? Right. Probably. She asked how she could help, and I remember asking for her to change my voicemail. I couldn't do it. She agreed and asked if there was anything else I needed to let her know. As a therapist working with people with significant anxiety, depression, attachment, and abandonment issues, leaving for 2 weeks without any notice or warning was difficult for me. I could hardly process it all. I just leave, I thought. Maybe my strong work ethic and frozen response were at play because I seemed confused. I just go home right now? I must have shared this concern with the psychologist whose office was right next to mine, and I still remember her clearly and compassionately telling me that the workload would always be there. Where I needed to be was with my family right now. I still remember that and how it helped give me permission to let the work part of me go and be with my family. Even when I came back, some clients asked why I was away. I said it was a family emergency and that I was sorry, but I couldn't talk about it further. And I truly couldn't. It was too raw, too real, and too vulnerable. They shared their biggest hurts, but I couldn't share mine. Not yet, anyway. That time would come. Somehow, I drove myself home. I remember thinking I was surprised I could drive at all and was shaking, but knew I just needed to keep driving and get home. My father had tried calling me several times that day, but hadn't been able to reach me. I called back when I got home, and all I can remember was my mom crying and him saying to me, It's true. It's true. He's gone. He handed someone else the phone, and I could hear him crying hysterically in the background, as if having to tell me and say it out loud again made it even more real and added another puncture in his heart. I'm not sure if I had seen my father cry before then, maybe once, but I can assure you I had never heard him cry like that before. It was as deep a cry as you could hear. My mom was screaming. Shit just got real. I was still in a mostly frozen, shaken state, but the effects of the bomb that went off in my family were starting to seep in. I don't even remember telling my then-boyfriend, now-husband. He and a friend picked me up and drove me to the airport. Within 3 hours of the call, I was on a plane from Sacramento to Simi Valley, where my parents lived. Just like that, in one moment, one call, my life and my family changed forever. And in 3 hours flat, I left everything and would never return the same again. Healing hands, a compassionate heart, and a smile that lights up heaven. On Michael's headstone, written by my father, Tony DiRimando.